Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Mains Event, where we take a hard-looking look into the world of sports at Pierce and beyond. I'm your host, Joshua Mains. Our biggest story so far on campus in the fall semester has been the firings of head coach of football, Jason Sabolic, and defensive coordinator, Torrey Hughes, following the second game of the season. Joining us today is newly named interim head coach, James Sims. Thank you for joining us, coach.
Thank you for having me.
So, obviously, growing up, I have to assume you played ball.
Yes, I did.
What position?
I was a running back and an outside linebacker. Played my high school ball in Akron, Ohio, and received a four-year scholarship to the University of Toledo to play running back.
Very nice, very nice. So, I mean, what were your experiences playing ball at a four-year college like that?
It was very enlightening, somewhat shocking. You know, it becomes a job at that level. You know, as we play as little kids from the age of 7 and 8 on up, it's fun. You know, you enjoy practices. Then you hit the Division I level, and it's a job. You have 3 practices a day, have a very thick book of plays that you have to learn, and your schedule is very tight, you know, from taking classes and when you have to report to practice, training camp, you know, meal table. So it changed the game for me because it was a job from doing something that used to be just fun.
So playing both sides of the ball, running back, outside linebacker, what side did you prefer?
Oh, I enjoyed both. I mean, in high school, most of my honors were on the defensive side. But all my life, you know, since the age of 8, I ran the ball. So, you know, you got the glory of scoring touchdowns and getting your name in the paper. So equally, I would say.
So growing up playing like that, did you ever think about coaching while you were still playing?
Oh, definitely. I always used to tell myself that I was going to play this game until I couldn't play it anymore. And once I couldn't play it anymore, I wanted to give back and become a coach. And I started coaching as early as 13 years old. We had street teams. Each street had, you know, their own team. And I had a team of 6-year-olds that we used to coach and go to different streets and compete. So it's something I've been doing for a long time.
So what was that like coaching at such a young age?
Oh, it was exciting. I knew right away it was something that I wanted to do. Having an effect on young men's lives like that, and, you know, a positive effect, let me say that, because you can have an effect on somebody's life negatively. But having a positive effect on their lives, it just reassured me it was what I wanted to do.
So I know you got 19 years of coaching experience.
All right.
So I know the last school you were at was Inglewood High.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like over there? I know you once again took over for a coach that left.
Right. And it was 4 coaches in like a 2-year time span. So, you know, it was a challenge. High school football is a challenge itself, you know, unless you're at some of the bigger private schools like a Mater Dei or, you know, you in Jacksonville, Florida, where I was, the Bowles High School, where money's plentiful and, you know, you have alumni and they're about their sports program. So you have all the support you need. But when you are at some of the inner city schools where finances is a problem, the administration are more concerned with education and, you know, academics altogether, and sports take not even a back seat, but, you know, sometimes not a seat at all. You know, it's difficult to accomplish things that you need to accomplish. So it gets to a point where that becomes very frustrating. I mean, it's always exciting no matter where you're at, inner city, private school, to work with the athletes. But when you add in the administration and parents and all the other outside factors, it makes it difficult. And I've always told my assistant coaches, it's much bigger than X's and O's. You have, you know, you can be a great X and O coach, but are you great with dealing with parents? You know, are you great with handling administration when problems arrive? So it's a lot to it.
Yeah. You mentioned Mater Dei. Every time I hear Mater Dei mentioned, I can't help but think, growing up in the Bay Area, biggest school for football up there was De La Salle.
Right.
They had the undefeated streak for however long. Obviously, you weren't up in that area, but
right.
Across the nation, are schools like that known throughout programs?
We were, being raised in Ohio and living in Florida for so long, we were familiar with the De La Salle name. But, you know, there's some schools over there with the same mystique. You know, Bowles has like 10 or 11 state championships, and the coach is like the winningest coach in Florida history. And we have some great schools in Ohio, St. Ed's. So you know, it's kind of that mythical national championship because they really didn't get to play back then in my era. But now it's changed. Some of these schools are traveling across the country to play against each other to really prove who's number one. And then with the creation of this IMG in Florida, I mean, it's taking it to another level. So,
yeah, obviously, I mean, a lot of people's issues with basketball at that youth area is that AAU mentality of everything. So with the IMG down in Florida, like, do you feel it's at all going that same route as AAU?
I don't think football will ever reach that point because you wouldn't be able to play football for a sustained period all year long. So I don't think football will ever experience it like track, basketball, baseball, and things of that nature. It was disappointing for me to see these sports do this because when I was coming up, you could be a three-sport star. You know, you could do a little bit of everything, but the way times are now, you have to find one sport and you have to focus on it because if you're a basketball and a football player, when you're at basketball, some football guy is going to all these camps and getting noticed and he's getting better while you're doing basketball. Or, you know, vice versa. If you're at football and some basketball player's going to AAU training and he's getting better and better and he's getting ahead of you. So these kids are forced to stick with one sport. And I think that's sad for the sport industry. I really do.
Yeah. And I mean, there's plenty of studies and things that show that leads to more injuries.
Exactly.
Not doing a varied amount of motions and things like that. Just throwing a ball, just shooting, constantly doing the same thing seems to be leading to more and more injuries.
Exactly.
Even at the professional level now. So obviously you stepped in an emotional time at the school. So really, what were your initial thoughts when you were approached by the administration to step in as interim head coach?
It was a difficult decision for me. And the reason I say it was a difficult decision because after 19 years, I had decided to step away because of some of the issues I told you about earlier. You know, dealing with administration, you always have some assistant coaches on your staff that think that they can do it better. It was just constant problems and situations. And I started to enjoy, you know, just going home every day and, you know, spending time with family and getting away from it. So when I was approached, at first I had to think about it for a second, but I had a few of the players come and ask me, would I be willing to step in and be their coach? And, you know, the minute that happened, it was no decision for me because I'm always about young men and, you know, helping them and being the best that they can be. So I accepted it, and I was surprised. It didn't take long that, you know, you had that feeling again. You enjoy it. And so I'm really enjoying it right now. And, of course, it is an interim position. And then I'll revisit with the vice president and president at the end of the year whether if it's something that I want to continue to do or even if they want me to continue. So we'll discuss that at the end of the season.
Yeah, so obviously as fitness coordinator and strength coach, you already had a relationship with all the athletes on campus, not just the football team. But really, do you feel that made it easier for you to transition in there, already knowing the personalities and things?
Yes, it was a very easy transition because I knew all the players. And it's almost kind of, you know, I've always had this belief that as a campus, whether it's high school or college, that all the sports just support each other. So because I have a connection with all the sports on campus, I already see that evolving. You know, I made the football players, or I won't say make, I asked them kindly to attend the women's volleyball game. And women's volleyball was excited to see them there. They were cheering them on. We'll be attending the women's soccer game on Tuesday. We'll go to some basketball games when they come around. And the coaches were happy to see that. And in return, you know, they're going to come see us play. And I think that's how it should be. I've had a few of the athletes say, hey, Coach Sims, you're coaching now. We're coming to watch the game. And my question was, why weren't you going before? So I see that coming about, that we're going to start having a connection with all the sports because of the relationship that I've had with the sports and the coaches. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I saw last semester men's volleyball and baseball were going to each other's games.
Right.
And, you know, it was a different atmosphere when you have athletes supporting athletes. They're a lot more vocal. You know, they have that inner passion even when they're not playing. So you can really feel it.
Yes.
So obviously when you stepped in, you know, what was the emotional state of the players when you came and addressed them that first time?
It was mixed emotions, just like with anybody, whether it's me or any other coach. As a coach, you know, the majority of your players are going to love you and they'll run through brick walls for you. And then you're going to have a few that, for whatever reason, you're not starting them. They don't feel they're getting enough playing time, or they don't like your philosophy. You're going to have a few kids that just didn't like you as a coach. That's normal. So you had a great portion of the kids that were very upset. You know, they love Coach Sabalik and what he offered for them. And then you had a couple players that were eager for a change. And so it's a hard position to be put in, because you have to come in and try to put your will into this team and the things that you want to establish and your beliefs. And they're already programmed for another coach's beliefs. And you got to get them to buy into what you're doing in order to be successful.
So I know we have a pretty good amount of out-of-state players on the team. Could you see any difference between, you know, the local players and out-of-state players in their reaction to it?
Oh, well, definitely. I guess that's another reason I was a good man for the job, because a lot of them are from Florida. I coached in Florida for 13 years, so I understand the dynamics. I understand the schools that they came from. I understand the living situations that they were in. So it's not like I was this strange coach that had no idea where they were coming from or what were going on. In fact, some of the schools they come from, I competed against. So I really knew their backgrounds. So you see a difference in the way they handle the game, because of course California coaches are different than Florida coaches. So it's a different experience. From me on the outside looking in, being in both states, including the state of Ohio, I've had experience with those three states. Florida brings a lot of speed to the table. I don't know what it is about that state and how fast kids can run, but it did bring about some speed and some very impressive California talent, you know. So it's a good mixture, and I think that eventually, once I'm able to get them to buy in with what I'm offering, we'll see some exciting changes.
I know traditionally with a football team, there seemed to be that New Jersey-Philadelphia pipeline. Does it look like now it's going down to Florida?
Well, you know, you have restrictions as far as, you know, out-of-state kids and who you can recruit. There's restrictions and laws for that. So, you know, we have to stay within those guidelines. But, you know, I would love to, you know, have Florida players, Philadelphia jersey that can add to some of the California players that are here. But we also have to be stronger about tapping into our own kids. You know, there's a respect there. You know, kids that grow up here in this area and they play hard and they want to go to the next level, they would like to think that their home school would at least be willing to, you know, take a look and offer them a chance.
So obviously the players were emotional. What was it like dealing with any of the parents that first week?
Well, thank God I really didn't have to deal with that. I didn't have you know, any problems. The athletic director, she's been great helping me out, and she took a lot of that impact, you know, from the parents. And of course, I understand. I have two children, 26 and 21 years old, and I would understand if I sent them almost 3,000 miles away and, you know, I was told this is who their coach is going to be and this is what's going to happen, and then all of a sudden, you know, 3 weeks into the season, there's a change. As a parent, I would be concerned about, you know, what my children are going to face at this point. So I haven't really had to field any of those phone calls or any problem like that. But if I do have to field them, I think the parents will be a little more comfortable that, you know, I am an East Coast guy, you know, from Ohio. So I understand the Pennsylvania kids that are here. I lived in Florida for 22 years, so I understand the Florida dynamics. So I'm hoping that will give them some comfort that I have an understanding of their children and where their children are coming from.
And so what was the first conversation with the assistant coaches like?
It was kind of strange. And the reason I say it is I was asked would I be interested in helping them with this situation. And when I expressed that I would help, they told me they would get back with me. So I didn't know at this point whether, you know, I was going to be the guy or not. And then a little while later, that evening or the next evening, I got a phone call from one of the assistant coaches. And he said, "Hey, coach, what's up?" And I said, "Hey, what's up?" He said, "What do you want us to do?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "We heard you're the coach." And I'm like, "Wow, you heard it faster than I. I hadn't heard it." So I went up and met with him. And, you know, I explained to him that I didn't want to come in and do a bunch of wholesale changes and have to start back over from square one. And that I wanted them to stay on staff if they were okay with that. And that I hoped that they would help me, because I didn't want to come and pass out 80 playbooks and try to get 80 people and 80 players and 10 coaches to try to learn what I do. I thought it was easier if I would go in and learn what 80 players and 10 coaches were doing. So just, of course, this last game was hard for me because I set up in a booth and watched the game, and there was really not much input I could give because I'd only been there 3 days and didn't really know the calls or the scheme. So I just had to watch and give what little input I could. So it's been nice this week to start adding some of my things and some of my touches in, and I'm hoping you'll see somewhat of a difference this week. It's still soon, but maybe a little difference.
Yeah, so obviously it's difficult stepping in on a Tuesday, having a game on Saturday. Obviously you guys had 3 hours down to Chula Vista to take on Southwestern.
Exactly.
Didn't exactly go as planned, 51-13 loss. I mean, what were your thoughts of what you saw on the field? Obviously, you were up in the booth, so you got a good bird's eye view of everything. So really, what were you thinking about what you saw on the field?
My main goal was not to be really judgmental of things that were going on, whether it was from a coaching standpoint or the playing standpoint. My idea was to look and find those things that we could build on. You know, what's positive out of this game, win, lose, or draw? And there was some positive things. I mean, you know, we had over 380 total yards offense. So that's good production. I mean, we ran the ball pretty well. We threw the ball well. You know, with two touchdowns called back and dropping a ball going into the end zone and several opportunities in the red zone without scoring, there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but it was positive to see those things happening. In my eyes, it could have been worse. It could have been 51-13 and we didn't have any touchdowns called back. We didn't fumble the ball going in, and we've never made it in the red zone. So there were some positive things going on, and I think we have some good things to work with. Defensively, you know, giving up 51 points defensively / special teams, of course there's some changes that need to be done there, and we've made that move to make some changes to hopefully get better in that area. And like I said, it'll be hard to judge it this week because they are new changes, and it's been a short period of time, so you may not see a big change, you know, as a fan in the stands, but anybody with football knowledge will be able to look at it regardless of the score, what happens this week, that we're making changes.
Yeah, there were definitely three key plays in that game that came back due to penalties. The two scores, you had the hold called on, August on Keyshawn's run. I actually have that on film. Looked like defense was probably initiating it, but, you know, it is what it is. There's holding on every call in football. I mean, do you feel like the struggles finishing in that game, you know, those three crucial penalties, two on touchdowns, one on a big third down conversion, I mean, do you think that was kind of an emotional hangover from the week, or is that more other problems on the field?
No, I don't think so. Of course, you could easily blame it on the referees. You could blame it on the fact that there was an emotional weekend for the kids, but they had a good practice during the week, even with what was going on, and they came to play. You know, they made some good plays and put themselves in position to have a good game. It just didn't go their way. No, I'm not going to blame it on the stress of the week. Of course, was it added adversity? Yes. Did it make or break them? No. You know, they lost the Moore Park game by 2 points, and the defense gave up over 500 yards in that game. They lose this one 51-13, and the defense gives up 500 yards in that game. So that tells you that there's some changes have to be made. You know, whether those are schematic changes or whether that's personnel changes, that's what we have to solve, and that's what we've been working on, because you're not going to be very successful in this league giving up over 500 yards per game. So we're making some changes there, and the kids see the changes. They're feeling positive about it, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, obviously defense giving up a lot of yardage. They're active, though. They're taking the ball away a lot. You know, they gave up five scores against Southwestern, took the ball away four times. You know, I think they had five takeaways against LA Southwest as well, three or four against Moorpark. So, obviously, they're active, but is it a matter of they're just active a little too late in the drives? They're letting them get downfield and taken away, but obviously, offense is rolling.
No, the defense, there's some good players on that defense. And sometimes the yardage is not reflective of how well a defense is playing. You know, you have turnovers, you have fumbles, and different situations that put defense in a bad situation. So when I say they're giving up 500 yards a game, that's not all to blame the defense. It's, you don't see in a game where, you know, the offense may fumble or special teams may make a mistake and put the defense in a bad situation. And then, of course, they gave up 21 points in the fourth quarter and a lot of yardage in the fourth quarter where, you know, we had twos and threes in and I was trying to evaluate other people. So some of that yardage is what we call garbage yardage and garbage points, you know, was after the fact. But, you know, it still is what it is. And we have to, as a coaching staff and a football team, find a solution. How do we clean this problem up?
So coming up this Saturday, you have Mount San Jacinto. They're coming in 2-0 off an overtime victory against Glendale last week. Glendale came back from a 20-point deficit to even send it to overtime. So as a coach, when you see a team give up a 20-point lead like that, what are your thoughts heading into a game against them?
Well, it's hard to judge. Watching a game and saying that they gave up a 20-point lead, you know, we got beat by 38 points. So we can't judge a team based on what happened in that particular game. I watched the game on film. And actually, Glendale took the lead. And San Jacinto scored with zero time left on the clock, like a 30 or 40-yard pass. And you could say, well, hey, if Glendale would have had two or three safeties back deep and knocked the ball down, we have a different game. But, you know, as a coach, who am I to judge what a coach's game plan was and what he was thinking at that time? Because I'm sure I've been ridiculed and judged over my years, too. So, I don't know the particular situation or why they made the call, but Glendale was very much in that game and had control of it until the clock hit zero and they scored right when it hit zero. So unfortunate for Glendale.
So any major changes we can look for on the field heading into this game?
You'll see not in a lot of major changes offensively, but defensively you're going to see some different looks. You're going to see defensive backs backpedaling and getting into different positions and staying over the top. We're going to try to avoid giving up the deep pass, which has been a problem this year. We're going to try to take that away and make everything play up under us and hopefully come up and make good tackles and make teams work for scores, not just give them up easy.
So I know you're planning on doing something to fix the red zone.
Yes.
Did you actually implant some new?
Yes, I put in some new plays and some new concepts for red zone. Of course, the offense was used to being in a spread offense inside the red zone and wide gaps, and teams were taking advantage of that, blitzing and doing other things to us. So, like I said, I don't want to go in and make a bunch of wholesale changes. I just told the coaches I want to give y'all plan B. I want to give y'all something else to put in your pocket so that if what you're doing is not working, you have something to look for. So for the next 3 weeks, when I'll actually be on the sidelines coaching, my plans will be plan B until we feel the need to make it plan A.
All right. Sounds good. Look forward to see what you guys got on the field today.
All right.
Kickoff is scheduled for 6 p.m. Saturday at Shepherd Stadium. If any of you want to actually check the new team out, thank you for joining us, Coach.
I appreciate you having me.
For all you listeners, stay up to date with any of Pierce College Sports news at theroundupnews.com or check us on Twitter at Roundup Sports. This has been the Mains Event. For KPC Radio, I'm Joshua Mains.